your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it, come in no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Thank you. my mad existence. I kept my promise. Don't keep your distance.
Have I said too much? There's nothing more I can think of to say to you. But all you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We'd like to welcome to our program Greg Pallas. Gosh, welcome to our program, Greg. You've got a lot to say, I bet, don't you, about sovereign debt and everything, right?
And everything, yeah. Glad to be with you, George, on a sunny morning since the plutocrats haven't stolen the sun yet. That's not till next Thursday, so we got some time.
Oh, good. That's great. There's a court case in New York in federal court about this sovereign debt of Argentina. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. Why should we care? Because what they do to Argentina, they do to Detroit the next week, and they do to Los Angeles after that. What it is there are some billionaires led by a guy named Paul Singer. He's known as Paul the Vulture Singer. I didn't give him that name. He's known on Wall Street as the Vulture. And what he does is, like any vulture, he picks on dying things. And in this case, he took years ago in 2000, the nation of Argentina collapsed after the IMF came up with a brilliant way to make it a miracle nation of free market, made it a free market poster boy. And, of course, the IMF's ideas of free market freedom really meant that the rich stole everything that wasn't nailed down. Argentina went completely bust. You had teachers eating out of garbage, you know, hunting through garbage cans for food. The nation was demolished. And so there was an uprising. The military dictatorship was overthrown. And the public told the IMF and the bankers that had ripped them off to go stick their debts where the sun don't shine. Interestingly enough, the U.S. administration decided that they could, even under George Bush, cut a deal with Argentina. The banks cut a deal with Argentina. 98% of the bondholders said, okay, Argentina said, we'll pay you back if you get your feet off our neck to the banks. We're not going to pay these usurious fees. We're not going to get ripped off. I wish we had done this in the U.S. We're not going to get ripped off by the big banks. So, if you stop overcharging us, we'll recover and pay you when we have it. And that Argentina has done. But 2% of the bonds were left out there in the market unaccounted for, and slowly, quietly, the vulture, Singer, who's worth several billion, bought them up. And now Singer is saying, now that Argentina is a tremendous economic power, Singer, the billionaire, the vulture, is saying, I want it all. I own these bonds, and so I own Argentina. Give me everything. And he's gone to a U.S. court to basically take control of the economy of Argentina. It would bankrupt our ally, a strong economy, which is, if it weren't for Argentina and Brazil and other such places, we would be in deeper trouble than we are now. So the Obama administration is thinking of going to the Supreme Court and saying, stop the vulture. He can't destroy Argentina. By the way, just so you know, the vulture bought bonds for pennies on the dollar, and he wants several dollars on the dollar. So he's talking about a 20,000% profit. He's talking about, you know, he put up maybe $100 million of his money at most, and he wants several billion dollars, or he's going to destroy Argentina. He even seized an Argentine naval ship on the high seas. He's a pirate. It's an old pirate brigantine that they use for exhibitions. The Obama administration is thinking of going into the Supreme Court and saying, you can't let the vulture destroy an ally with this bogus financial claim. 98% of the debt holders agreed to a deal, and they've been actually doing quite well under that deal. And so it's the legal issue is called sovereign immunity. But for reasons I can explain, it sounds like Obama's doing the right thing, standing up against vicious, rapacious vulture bankers. But he's really not. I can explain that to you if you'd like to know.
Right. What when they issued the new debt, the public debt, was there a special provision in there to pay other past debt in accordance with the new debt issue at the same time or not?
Yes.
Is that what?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is that 98, okay, they offered a deal. They said, here's the deal. We're not going to pay off these usurious bank charges. You saw it's just like it was basically like subprime loans to Argentina, just like the, you know, subprime loans that brought our mortgage market down and destroyed our nation's economy and the world's economy. I mean, Argentina was the place where they practiced it. But when the Argentines rose up and said, we're not going to pay for this crap. We're not going to do it. They did work out. They said, but here's what we will do. We'll pay you off. Will in effect give you stock in Argentina. When the Argentine economy rises, you get a percentage. So actually the banks that went along, 98%, J.P. Morgan, United Bank of Switzerland, Citibank, and others, they've actually done quite well, because to have a piece of Argentina is a nice, sweet deal at the moment. I mean, they've done very well since the banks stopped sucking their blood. But they did say, okay, 2% of the debt, there's 2% holdouts, but they can join in. If they want their money, we'll set it aside. They could always get what we've offered everyone else. But Singer doesn't want that. He wants his pound of flesh. If he doesn't get 2,000%, if he doesn't get billions, if he doesn't get 20, 30, 40 times what he pays, this is how he operates. And by the way, what he has been doing to Argentina, he did to the U.S. auto industry. This is the same guy who did in Argentina on Delphi Auto Parts, the old auto parts division of General Motors. He got $4 billion from the U.S. Treasury and as part of the auto bailout and immediately closed every single U.S. auto parts plant, 33 plants, and moved them, everyone to China after getting $4 billion in bailout money. And the reason, and they said, well, how could Obama have done that in Detroit? The answer is because General Motors, this was their own old auto parts division, Delco. General Motors would have shut down unless he got his $4 billion. So it was complete. In fact, the auto czar, who's Obama's auto czar, said this is absolute blackmail. This is a crime. But you and I, as taxpayers, wrote the check to Singer. So Singer wants to pull off. He figures if he could take down Obama and the U.S. auto industry for $4 billion, close all the jobs, move them to China, he can easily knock off Argentina. But Obama's suddenly saying, well, maybe not, because under the United States Constitution, you cannot suddenly start suing our allies and bankrupting our allies on some because you hold a piece of paper in your hand. The Constitution says the president can step in and say you can't do that.
Right. When sovereign states become insolvent or default on their debt, are there any statutory bankruptcy protections in place or automatic stays, or are they subject to collection at that time as well as a creditor could collect?
Well, that's the thing, is that there's no real bankruptcy provision. Just like until recently, we didn't have bankruptcy provisions for cities until Chapter 9 was created of our bankruptcy code. So a sovereign government goes bankrupt, and unlike you or I, if we go into bankruptcy, we work out a deal. The creditors are required to work out a deal. We cut the debt or we make an arrangement to pay later. But there's no law that requires a formal bankruptcy for nations. So it was just assumed everyone, you know, would sit down, go along. And like I say, these other banks did well. And by the way, I just want to mention, that's the reason why Obama, in my opinion, is actually appears to be doing the right thing. Not because he cares about the people of Argentina, not because he cares about, you know, saying that the vulture singer who ripped off the U.S. Treasury is now not going to destroy an ally. I think his main concern is that Singer has not only sued Argentina, he sued J.P. Morgan. He sued United Bank of Switzerland. The vulture has sued Citibank because he said, listen, you guys have done very well with Argentina. They paid you a lot of money over the years. Give it to me because I own the bonds. So he's actually not only suing Argentina, he's suing the big banks. And I hate, and frankly, I think that that's why Obama's concerned. It's suing. Once you sue J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon, then Obama's going to get in your face. And that's just the truth. But there is no formal bankruptcy. So this guy, in other words, this guy goes around the world taking the U.S. auto industry hostage, Argentina hostage, the Republic of Congo hostage. He actually took the cholera medicine money that we sent to the Republic of Congo, and he carted that off and stuck it in his bank account. And by the way, do you know who his partner is?
Who is that?
Ann Romney.
I see.
Yeah, you see, exactly.
You once said that it lined up where the banks and the hedge funds were in opposition to one another. I think I interviewed before the election, and is that the way it worked out, you think?
Yeah.
Or what is that still a problem?
I think
what is their country?
Yeah, I think that behind, okay, you've got the vulture ready to rip the heart out of Argentina, and I hate to say it, our president, whether it was this president or George Bush, they don't care. They don't care if Argentina drops off into the ocean. Except that, of course, Argentina is buying stuff from us, so we need them alive for a while because no one else is buying, right? Other than that, we don't care if Argentina dies tomorrow morning and people start starving again. I think it's a big problem is that these hedge fund vultures, these sharks, have gone in to rip the heart out of the U.S. banks. So it's not just Argentina, which is a victim. It's American banks, and international banks. In fact, it really started in the attack. Obama's facing down the vulture Singer started with United Bank of Switzerland. Obama's favorite golfing buddy was the U.S. president of United Bank of Switzerland, and they put together the Argentina deal. And it was funny, after one of his golf outings with the UBS president up in Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, that Obama gets out of the golf cart and suddenly he's going to do like a Tiger Woods wife on Singer. So it's clear to me that this is the big banks who are saying enough of these hedge fund managers that are ripping us off. And by the way, I think that's a lot of what's behind the attack on the arrest of SAC Stephen Cohn, and not the arrest, but the charging Stephen Cohn with and his company with insider trading. This week, the SEC verdict against the trading game by the fabulous Fab Fabrice yesterday. You have basically the Obama administration going after these hedge fund vultures and sharks in Argentina, all over the world, because they are attacking the banks. So what you're seeing is a battle of titans, and Obama's on the banks' side, which is not surprising.
Well, that's who won the election, the banks, mm-hmm. Didn't it?
Basically, the vultures' partner is Ann Romney. What is called the Ann Romney Blind Trust. It's not so blind. I would call it the peekaboo trust. You know, it's a blindfold with where you're allowed to look, lift it up
with holes in it.
The blindfold has a lot of holes in it. So it's the Ann Romney Blind Trust. So basically, you had Romney and his hedge fund buddies and his speculator buddies, with which he participated, in which he was a participant, Bain Capital, all the rest of these sharks, of course, versus the establishment banks like J.P. Morgan and United Bank of Switzerland. And the establishment banks won the election. And now they're getting spanked all over the place. I think one of the reasons, too, is not only did Singer go after Detroit, because I don't think Obama cared that he ripped off the Treasury and got rid of the jobs. Obama doesn't care about those jobs in Detroit, believe me. But Singer also pulled the same stunt with Greece when 98% of the bondholders in Europe agreed to a bailout deal for Greece, and Singer held out and said, you know, I want 500% profit. And he alone was given full payout and then some. He got 100% of everything he demanded. He said, if not, I'm going to bring down the entire European economic system, because if I force Greece into a default, of course, every bank in Europe, which is holding Greek bonds, also goes into default. So that this guy is a kind of economic terror. Yesterday, Max Keiser, who used to be in the finance industry, described Singer as an economic terrorist, a finance terrorist. And that's probably pretty reasonable. He's like the berserker in the helicopter who pulls the pin out of the grenade and says, you know, give me what I want or I just, you know, let go. We all blow up. I mean, his tactics are completely berserk, but we're talking the international finance system's held hostage. And, you know, I mean, I would like to say that Obama is doing the right thing for the right reason, that is going after these vultures like the SAC, like the Vulture, like Fabulous Fab. These are super creepy guys. I wish he were doing it for the right reasons, but I think he's doing it because the big banks are saying these billionaire vultures are going after us. In fact, I've been writing at GregPalace.com
right.
about these things.
Do you know much about the Quebracho money unit that was used in Argentina and the Chaco province during the economic crisis down there in 2001 or 2?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that?
This happened in the U.S. at various points in various parts of Europe. When the money goes bad, and that can
right.
be either way. People think of the German hyperinflation with, you know, where you need barrels of money to buy bread. In other cases, like in Argentina,
sure.
you have actually the opposite, where the money becomes, you don't want to have to buy a loaf of bread with a bar of gold either. So you don't want money to become, you don't want it to become worthless, and you don't want it to become too valuable where you can't get it and you can't buy anything. So you need more money in the system. So this was a move to create local currencies and barter currencies. So people moved to barter, people moved to creating their own local currencies and scripts. And until the Argentine government, which had pegged the peso to the U.S. dollar, when the dictatorship was overthrown, they said they overthrew the dollar as well. They said, we're not going to peg to the dollar anymore. And that, and that was one of the issues, that they said, well, we're going to pay off the debts in Argentine money, not in U.S. dollar money. And so the banks went berserk, and then they cut a deal. You know, they cut a deal. I'm not going to go along with my own destruction. I'm not going to starve to death because you say that's the rules you've created. And we see, you know, Detroit bankrupt now. And, a lot of that goes back to the same guy which has Argentina by the throat. The same guy that has Argentina by the throat is one of the main reasons Detroit is bankrupt. You say, well, how could Detroit go bankrupt after the auto bailout? Well, because the auto parts industry, the main auto industry was saved, but the auto parts industry, which is a big hunk of the jobs, was completely wiped away, completely shut down and completely moved to China. And that was, Paul the Vulture Singer. And so now we have... I would not be surprised, by the way. I know how these guys operate. I'll bet you, dollars to donuts that Singer has a lot of Detroit debt, knowing that he was wrecking one of the main industries in Detroit, that he probably made sure that he was picked up some of those Detroit bonds cheap, and now he's going to hold Detroit by the throat. That's how they operate. That's just how they operate, not like, And these, by the way, this is the people that Romney called job creators. Sure.
Right. Have we evolved into a worship of wealth and money? Is that what has happened over the last century or two?
Since Stone Age, I just read the history of money yeah. and coins. And people have, of course, been fascinated and loved with and, powers that be as sovereigns have created. You know, in Britain, money used to be called a sovereign. So the sovereign creates the money and, of course, keeps most of it themselves and for themselves and their cronies. So we've always had kind of a worship and a money lust in the human species. But the thing is, what we've now added is this kind of glorification of manipulators. In other words, I have to say that while I was never a big fan of Henry Ford or Carnegie, who built the steel mills, or Mark Hanna, the railroad barons, these big industrial barons, but darn, they created industries of jobs. I mean, they may have exploited workers and created filth and manipulated politicians, but they at least left us some industries. We are now praising. Americans are learning to praise hotshot artists who create something called financial products. A derivative is not a product, okay? There's no such thing as a financial product. That's a lie. These guys don't create jobs. But we learn how to praise these crazy, vicious billionaires whose only job is to suck money out of our pension funds through financial manipulation. And we say how brilliant they are. I mean, I was reading... The New York Times is praising the head of Goldman Sachs because he was brilliant. He was brilliant. He was so brilliant in offloading bad mortgage securities just before the crash. Well, wait a minute. That used to be called fraud. He knew that these mortgage securities he was selling, that Goldman Sachs was selling, the mortgage securities that they were selling, billions of dollars worth in something called a Backus. The Backus Fund, they knew that those mortgages were all crap and were going to go belly up. That wasn't smart. That's fraud. If you sell someone a car and it has no engine in it, and he says, man, this baby runs great, and take the money and run down the street, and the guy gets in the car, there's no engine, that's a crime. That's not, you didn't create a job. You're not a job creator.
Hey, Greg, the new car out of Detroit won't have an engine. They'll be rolling off the assembly line, no engine.
One thing I liked that Obama did is that when they moved all the jobs to China, Romney and the Vulture, on the auto parts.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Obama didn't say a word because he was selling the idea that his auto bailout was this brilliant miracle that saved all these jobs. So he didn't want to say, well, actually, I blew it on the auto parts and we got skinned. But what he did do is he did add a tariff on Chinese auto parts so that every time Romney imports an auto part into the U.S., so almost all auto parts in the United States now come from outside. So we don't really make American cars anymore. We assemble cars in America, but we don't make them. And the thing is, but you have to now. But Obama at least said, okay, you're going to have to pay an import duty. I'm very... I went to school with a lot of these guys. I went to the University of Chicago Business School and got my economics degree there. And it's interesting. The guy that was just found guilty yesterday of massive market manipulation, Fabulous Fab Ture, he's now entering my old program, the economics PhD program at the University of Chicago, where they train you in the ways of mass market manipulation, thievery by derivatives. And, it's like...
Well, do you remember...
Sick.
Yeah, sick. Do you remember... Yeah, you remember the
I
book, The Cheating Culture? Well, there was a book that came out a number of years ago. I've been trying to get the author on my program for years, but I hadn't succeeded yet. He's always on vacation or something. But he wrote a book about the cheating culture. And just an idea or an example is when these students at these universities hired people to write their papers, see?
Yeah.
The ones that had money could hire people to write their term papers
and
for them.
Happened,
If you win, all is in, it's only important to win.
And then you're,
no
and
matter
then you're
how
wise,
you get there.
Brilliant, and you're and in fact, if you steal enough, you're a
then you're brilliant.
Because if you,
they'll write articles in the Wall Street and praise you.
You get these stories where these great philanthropists because they take 1% of their money. That, you know, that they don't miss a lunch with their donation. So they make a $10 million donation from a guy who's worth $7 billion. Stephen A. Cohn, who is being they haven't charged him with a crime. They've charged a lot of his people with crimes, but now he's being barred from the they're trying to bar him from the securities industry for allowing massive insider trading. But the guy is personally worth $8 billion. Okay, so he will be barred from going to work to work every day. That's rough.
He's got $8 billion in his pocket, right?
He doesn't have to. It's like crazy, you know? It's like...
Hey, Greg. Yeah, you remember that little comic book character that rolled around in that big ball of money? Was that Donald Duck or Donald Scrooge?
Uncle Scrooge, right?
Scrooge? He rolled around in this big room,
Scrooge
and it was piles
duck,
of
right.
coins.
And today, Scrooge McDuck would be considered a job creator, a hero, a philanthropist.
I mean, Yeah,
right, exactly.
A creator
a wise
of industry,
man.
Right?
And
then are we not training our students in these marketing programs in the university on how to get there and win and use these mind and psychological manipulation tools to do it?
Chicago at the business school and at the economics school, both. There was not one single class on production and production management. There was not one single, I'm really interested in working in the steel industry. My vision, I would love to, because we used to have steel industry in the Chicago area, I would love to, you know, be the guy that came up with a way to save the steel industry in America and come up with a way of producing steel here. You would have been laughed out of the seminars, because all these guys talked about nothing but, you know, derivatives and, you know, finding the weird little fluctuations in the market and basically skinning the, fleecing the fools. And that's what literally the entire training.
Yeah, fleecing the fools, that's
fools.
It.
And then half the other training was why you shouldn't feel bad about it. It had all these theories about why greed is good. Milton Friedman was my teacher, and, you know, he was... Friedman just, you know, really believed that the greedier you are, the less you care about other people. He said that just gets in the way of the market, and the market will take care of everyone. Well, you know, it was, of course, a brilliant, for those who were stealing everything with two hands, it was brilliant to say get out of the way of the market. You know, don't, God forbid we should control and regulate the market. God forbid we should apply democratic principles. I mean, I believe you should be able to drive wherever you want, but not at 200 miles an hour and through all the red lights, you know, and drive through a school building at high speed. You know, we don't think twice about regulating driving. We just feel like, hey, if we're going to walk down the streets, our kids are going to play outside, we better have some driving regulation. We can disagree about how much the government should control it, but we all kind of agree you got to have some rules of the road. But when it comes to finance, and you have these guys carting off jobs to China, carting off billions of dollars of public treasury, bringing nations like Argentina, the Congo to its knees, holding Greece for ransom, you know, are you saying that that's okay? But if the same guy gets in the car and goes 78 miles an hour, he gets a speeding ticket. So it's worse for him to speed in his eighth Maserati than it is for him to literally, in the case of the Congo, these people were letting people starve to death. You know, I mean, we have we need rules of the financial road, I'm sorry. And when I was at Chicago and they said, no, that's for chumps, that gets in the way of efficient markets and everyone's better off. Well, I'm waiting for the better off. They used to have a phrase. There was a Chicago professor named Joseph Schumpeter, who was one of the founders of the so-called Austrian school. Well, the Austrians, they're all in Chicago, in fact. And, the Austrian school. So Schumpeter used to talk about creative destruction. You know, that's okay, because in the end, after we rip everything up, a new free market miracle land will be created, and we'll all live in kind of a free market heaven, and we'll all be rich. In fact, I've seen a lot of, you know, creative destruction. All I've seen is the destruction. I'm still waiting for creative to arrive. I don't see a lot of creative.
Right.
The only place I see creative is like,
yeah, where's the creative going?
Where they told these vultures and finance manipulators to go stick it, and they told the IMF to go stick it. That's what pretty creative.
Yeah. Created fraud. What they created.
And,
fraud.
And as far
right?
as the fraud is, in fact, yeah. I had a professor, George Stiglitz, Stigler, excuse me. No, I don't want to confuse him with the great Joe Stiglitz. Their names are similar. But George Stigler
yeah,
was one of the first people to win the Nobel Prize in economics. And he said there is no such thing as fraud on the market. That the market always knows what's going on. The price in the market always corrects itself. So he would testify in court cases when the government would arrest people for fraud on the market, market manipulation, selling watered stock, insider trading. He would testify. He had his big Nobel Prize. He'd say, there is no such thing as market fraud. It doesn't exist. Okay, well, that's a very good theory for the thieves. It's just like, imagine if you had a bank robber, and the bank robber hires some hotshot economists. Well, there really is no such thing as bank robbery. You know, it's just a kind of armed withdrawal.
Well, armed withdrawal and redistribution like Robin Hood.
But this is what we were taught, and I think I was actually having kind of a sick laugh over the fact that this guy Fabius Fabre, for those who don't know, yesterday there was this trader from Goldman Sachs was found guilty of a multi-billion-dollar fraud in the mortgage market. Now, by the way, I'm a little bit sympathetic because the kid was only, at the time, he was 27 years old. He was only an assistant to a guy named John Paulson. It was Paulson who came up with this sick gimmick that ripped off billions of dollars.
Yeah.
They assigned this French kid, Goldman Sachs assigned a French kid to be the assistant to Paulson. Goldman Sachs is not charged, though they paid a fine. Paulson, who personally pocketed $1 billion, personally, the highest single payout to any human in the history of the planet, $1 billion personally, went to John Paulson under this scam, $3 billion to his company. And the Royal Bank of Scotland, the biggest bank in England, went bankrupt because of this. So he ripped off the Royal Bank of Scotland and a bunch of pension funds, put $1 billion in his pocket, and who do they arrest? His assistant. His assistant. So the assistant gets arrested, but now the assistant says, okay, well, because he's, and by the way, the assistant's only punishment is that he won't be able to trade securities. So, because he knows that he can't be a stock trader anymore.
Slap on the wrist, yeah.
He's now entered my old program at Chicago. He's getting his PhD at Chicago, where he can really learn, where he can basically become a professor to teach thievery. You know, it's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thievery 101.
So many Americans have been bought into this idea that these guys are geniuses, they're job creators. We don't want government getting in the way of the marketplace. Come on, don't be a chump. Don't be a mark. You know, the one thing I'll say for the Argentines is that we're not putting up with this. We're not putting up with this. And they did very, very – it's amazing. When they say we're not – you know, when the people rose up in Argentina, as they did in Ecuador, and said we're not paying this crap, these phony bills, same in Brazil. Brazil, Argentina, Ecuador, when they stood up and said, no more of this stuff, you're not ripping us off anymore, I told the banks go fly, those banks backed up a mile away. And the oil companies backed up a mile away and said, okay, well, let's cut a deal. It's amazing. It's just, you know, they're all like bullies. You know how a bully is. You know, they're threatening, they huff and puff, you know, they slap you around. But then if you stand up to a bully, they start whimpering and say, okay, all right, don't hurt me. Bullies are all the same, whether they're big banks, vulture funds, hedge funds. They're all big oil companies that are, you know, ripping people off all over the world. They're all bullies, and you can face down a bully. But, you know, unfortunately, America still has a long way to go, and Obama's kowtowing to the, you know, like I say, he's doing the right thing in that he's going after Paul the Vulture Singer, he's going after the SAC, he's going after these guys, but... And unfortunately, I think it's only because his banker buddies feel threatened. And, you know, I wish that he was doing the right thing for the right reason, but he's doing the right thing for kind of suspect reasons.
Right. Were there any closing comments?
Well,
here you'd
I would
like
say
that
the story is kind of unfolding. I want to see if the Obama administration keeps standing up to these pirates, because they haven't. They've made noises that they're going to go to the Supreme Court and say that you can't attack a sovereign government. Well, that means you can't attack the people. That includes us in Detroit. That includes Detroit. That includes Greece. That includes the American Treasury. I would like to see if Obama, finds his jewels, ultimately,
right,
even if it's because he's pushed by the banks, whether he does the right thing. One thing, go to gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST, and I'll be, commenting and analyzing, I'll give you a sports commentary on each side, banks versus hedge funds.
Okay, well, we're going to have that up on the website when we revise it here in a few minutes, and we'll get all
That's
of that
perfect.
Hypertext
okay.
links.
Good luck
to you,
and thanks.
Okay? But thank you very much. Thank you, Greg. You're always a jewel.
Good.
But a real one, a real diamond.
George, you're the best.
Okay. Hey, you're not okay. Paste. That's for damn sure. Thank you, Greg. Okay. We want to thank Greg Palast for that interview. Gosh, he is really insightful. We started off this hour with Don't Cry For Me by Julie Covington. She was one of the original artists that cut that song. But we want to end up our second hour here with some news. And gosh, there's a lot going on out here. And so much has happened. The Benghazi thing is blowing up. They've got a CNN story out now saying that, for one thing, that they're doing a polygraph test monthly on some of the CIA employees. It was a big cover up. My gosh, it blew up in their face. Now they're trying to cover it up. I just hope and pray we can get a little bit of truth out on this and try to right the country. President Obama said the other day something about phony scandals. I don't know exactly what he means by that. That is so off the wall, phony scandals. What is that, Mr. President? We have real scandals. The scandals are breaking every day. The NSA, the IRS, the Benghazi. I mean, it goes on and on and on, and people are just getting really upset about these so-called scandals, and they're real scandals. The Benghazi stuff, they said that there were people watching what went on there for virtually hours. And the CIA people are being monitored very closely now. I mean, what are we doing? Obama has the greatest number of whistleblower prosecutions of all presidents prior to him. I mean, what do we do? We have a whistleblower law, and then we start going after the very people that could right the boat. I know we've got Snowden over there in Russia. He revealed a lot of things, but you know what? He created a conversation that recently a bill was narrowly defeated that would tighten up on NSA's capability in looking at these intercepted phone calls and so forth. I mean, that is could have been real progress, but no. Mike Rogers, the first hour, we played some clips on Mike Rogers and talked with Todd Fletcher. But Mike Rogers, Republican from Michigan, and he's a very powerful member of the House. He came in there and started shutting down any opportunity to try to get this bill passed, which would make it much more difficult for NSA. It would take away some of their warrantless wireless interception rights and capabilities, and they weren't going to go for that. So he comes in there and he starts talking about I made this point the first hour, but I think I need to repeat it again, is that he made the point that he said had this system that they have presently in place on interception and so forth and wiretapping, warrantless wiretapping and all this, and data collection, metadata is what he's saying on some cases. People are alleging that that's just a put-up job, that, man, they're recording everything. They have capability now at some of these recording centers to record virtually everything that's going across the wire. But anyway, he comes up with this supposition. I mean, it's a wild supposition or proposition, or the probability is something else. But he says that he said not only on Meet the Press but Face the Nation, basically the same thing. He said, had we had this system of collection and interception in effect at the time of 9/11, we would have caught that terrorist that lived in San Diego, because we would have picked up on his calls from some terrorists overseas. And then we could have zeroed in on him and stopped him from being on the plane that I think it was Flight 77 that crashed into the Pentagon. Well, Mr. Rogers, there's a debate about whether a plane even crashed into the Pentagon. And many of your 9/11 truth people are saying that there was no physical proof that a Flight 77 actually crashed into the Pentagon. And I'd have to agree with them, and I couldn't anymore disagree with you anymore. And for you to use a fake crashing attack on the Pentagon is unconscionable. Nobody in the media is going to tell you like it is, Mr. Rogers, because Mr. Rogers, you might oversee a lot of the intelligence, but you're dead wrong on this one, and you're not helping us maintain our liberties and freedoms. So so much for that. You can go in and replay the Face the Nation and Meet the Press and listen to his very words. We have clips on during our first hour, so if you listen to our first hour with Todd Fletcher, you'll be able to see what's going on. Earlier this hour, Greg Pallas was speaking about the Argentine debt. There's presently court case, a federal court case in New York City, federal courts. And you've got these hedge fund operators that are in there that have purchased up way back during the financial crisis in Argentina. They bought up a bunch of debt, public bonds, at a very, very cheap rate, and pennies on the dollar, and now they're trying to collect out. And so they're in federal court trying to perfect their ownership and force Argentina to pay this debt. Of course, Argentina cut loose some of this debt because it was strangling the country to death. But so it remains to be seen exactly what will happen. There was this debate, or there's this opinion that Gray put forward even before the election in 2012. He put forward the idea that Obama colluded with the bankers, and he was against the hedge funds, and Romney was part of the hedge fund group. And I believe Ann Romney is part of this Elliott management, or has certain interest involved with Elliott management. And so Paul Singer heads up Elliott Manager, one of the main principals. And according to Greg Palace, Ann Romney has some investments along with Paul Singer. And I think there was a boat recently over in Liberia, that they, Argentine training vessel, that they stopped from leaving port, and tried to get some money. I don't know what exactly transpired there, but they weren't letting it leave the port. These global financiers now are beginning to exert their power, their money power, on an international basis. They were always well versed in international operations, but what they're doing is they're coordinating with other authorities throughout the world to actually put and clamp down on their debt collecting. So they're beginning to work and be productive in that area. Egypt, we still can't forget that the actual armed forces owns about 20-35% of the economy. They are not going to relinquish their control, and they're going to, I think, my opinion is they've decided for a severe crackdown of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, I don't know at what level it's going to end, but but they intend to go in and actually crack down very vigorously and very strongly against the Muslim Brotherhood. And in doing that, they're going to have the problem this time. In the past, under Nasser, when he took over control of Egypt in the 50s, there were crackdowns on the Muslim Brotherhood, but they weren't that large a group. What the military, the armed forces, has to put up with this time, or to think about, and they better really think this through, they're going to have a problem, because the Muslim Brotherhood has a political party, and of course they'll try to disband that too, possibly. But the Muslim Brotherhood has large crowds out on the streets. What's insidious is that your reports that we're receiving back is that many of your demonstrators were shot in one of three places, and that means they were trying to get headshots or heart shots, but they were either shot in the head, in the neck, or the heart. Indication of a shot in the neck would mean they missed the head or the heart area. And so we've got snipers operating on the government side in Egypt, taking out certain protesters and just assassinating them, and sniping. Snipers are involved. Otherwise, the people would have more indiscriminate wounds up from all over their body in different places. They're also using gas over there, and we think it's CS gas, which was also used at the Branch Davidian complex in Waco. And it's a very harsh gas. It's supposed to be used outside. Of course, it's being used outside over there. It's a particulate. It's not actually a gas, so it has to have has to be created within an aerosol of some kind. Something that can vaporize and can carry the very, very tiny particulate pieces of the CS inside the droplets of an aerosol spray of some kind. So we see that that is being used in Cairo. We're seeing a lot of people coming down with a very, very injury to their lungs. The same gas, we feel, is also being used over in Turkey, in Istanbul, on some of those demonstrations there. I don't have my hand on the pulse over there. In Libya, this Benghazi attack is being covered up by our government from the highest levels. So that meant that the stand down probably came from the White House. And we also saw a stand down or a call back. LBJ, during the USS Liberty attack, which occurred in 1967 off the coast of Israel, LBJ called the pilots back that were headed that way to save the USS Liberty. And the USS Liberty, as a result, almost got sunk. There were only some very fine Israeli pilots that refused to bomb the USS Liberty and instead dropped their bombs in the Mediterranean and went back to their bases without any bombs whatsoever. So that was quite an insight. Well, they were trying to court-martial them, I'm sure, but I think they dropped it later. It's never been admitted by Israel that they did attack our USS Liberty ship, which was a naval interception ship working for the NSA off the coast. And they think that they had uncovered some atrocities committed by the Israeli army at that time. We've got the IRS scandal. We've got just recently, it was revealed that they were trying to consolidate a bunch of this information into greater and greater databases. The idea is there's a consolidation of information and data on everyone. And as they accumulate more and more data on everyone, they're going to find out who's against the money system. And that's actually what this is about, in my opinion, is to go after the people. And there's a lot of people, they call them teabaggers, I guess, that are against the Federal Reserve. They want to try to identify all of those people that are against the Federal Reserve and against the money system for future handling. And that's what I think this thing is really about. Yeah, if you believe like I do and other people that I've been around a number of years. 9/11, I'm a 9/11 truther, and I do not believe that jihadists from overseas came together and brought those buildings down. The technology that it would take to bring especially the North and South building down would have to have come from a very, very high level of technology. And I don't believe that Bin Laden, Osama Bin Laden, or anyone around him had that technology. We do see this Hamburg group that was being surveilled by David Edger, who was running the CIA desk in Hamburg at the time, as being one of the central core groups that did come to America. And we see Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City area, as being a possible nexus point for many of these jihadists that they were accused of being on those planes on 9/11 attacks. So I think we need to start, we need independent researchers to look at the David Boren connection and the David Edger connection, which still exists today at Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma. We feel that they were involved in some way on 9/11, and I think that that's a good place to begin an investigation. They both are associated together, and they are friends there at the University of Oklahoma. So all you young researchers out there, start digging into their backgrounds. And David Boren was the chairman in the Senate Intelligence Committee for years in Congress. And he was sitting with a CIA director Tenet, on the morning of 9/11 in a downtown Washington, D.C. hotel. Well, what was that all about, you know? It's like they were sitting there waiting for it to happen so they could, you know, close down America, and that's basically what they did. The idea of 9/11 was a powerful tool, but also the anthrax attacks were launched by someone, you know, and this is a very, very a murky proof about who actually did those anthrax attacks. We feel that at the time Congress was balking on passing of the Patriot Act, and so they needed a little nudging. So we feel that the anthrax attacks at that time were the nudging that was required to make them pass the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was not read by hardly anyone. It's draconian in nature, and it is the worst thing that law that ever passed. And 9/11, the attack on this country, was the worst event to ever happen in United States history. And I believe that it was an inside job all the way. It's a black bag operation, or black operation, a deep black operation, and we've got to get down to the bottom of this. If we don't, we're going to lose our country. And those that can't get there, come on, let's try. Look into this. Look at the plane parts. There's no plane parts around the Pentagon. Hey, let's all wake up and try to become better Americans and save this country once and for all. We're going to say goodbye. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week. We're going to have some really good guests. We'll put them up on our site, thesecrettruth.com, thesecrettruth.com. But thank you very much for listening, and tune us in next weekend. Bye-bye.